Welcome to the Eigencast, a podcast about the business of enterprise technology. How to buy it, how to sell it, and how to use it. I'm your host, Justin Warren. In this episode, we talk to Dan Warmenhoven, ex-CEO of storage vendor NetApp, who recently joined the board of Cohesity. We talk about the coming consolidation in the primary storage market as venture capital investors like Sequoia Capital turn off the flow of money.
Basically, they're done. I mean, they think that segment is going to be very slow growth for as far as the eye can see, and they're not going to make any more investments.
We also talk about why traditional infrastructure vendors are under pressure.
You know, the thing that's really pressuring everybody, I think, is AWS.
Dan shares his views on the state of the information security industry.
No CIO in the world wants a public execution, right?
And we get some tips on how to sell IT gear.
Somebody once told me there's two things that really sell, sex and fear. IT is not sexy, so you do it on fear.
All that coming up in just a moment on the Eigencast. This episode of the Eigencast is brought to you by Pivot9 Consulting. You can find them at pivot9.com. If you'd like to sponsor an episode of the Eigencast, contact us via email at eigencast@eigenmagic.com. This interview with Dan Warmenhoven starts off talking about him joining the board at Cohesity and Cohesity's products and so on. But then we move on to discussion of the storage market more generally. Given that he was CEO of NetApp for quite a number of years, I figured he probably knows a thing or two about that market. But we were talking about venture capital, what it looks like for the next year in that market. But then we look into sort of more general terms around cloud computing, AWS, and also information security. Now, Dan was, until very recently, on the board of Aruba Networks. They were acquired by HP, which is why he's not on the board anymore. And it's an interest that I share, like many of you, so I thought I'd ask him a few questions about his experiences of the InfoSec industry and what it looks like for the future. So here we go with the interview with Dan Warmenhoven. Well, let's jump in.
Yeah.
So you're joining the board of Cohesity. I have many questions. The first of which is, why aren't you just retired and swimming around on your island made of money?
I enjoy being involved in business of different forms. I didn't want a day job anymore. I mean, being a CEO is a full-time, and I mean, even more than full-time job. But I was done with that. But I still enjoy being involved in the tech sector. And, you know, I'm on several boards. I'm on the Palo Alto Networks board, for instance, and Cohesity, obviously. I just got off the Aruba board. We sold Aruba to Hewlett-Packard earlier this year. But yeah, I've been on many, and I really enjoy it. I especially enjoy this phase of a company, you know, where they've got a product and technology, and they're trying to figure out really how to take it to market effectively, you know, everything from pricing to channel strategy to target market segments, and that's something I think I can add value to.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question.
But no, I'm not ready to retire.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
I'm definitely not ready to retire.
Fair enough.
I don't want a day job.
Yep.
I don't want a full-time employer. But I love the interaction, especially in the younger companies.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, and that was going to be my next question, I suppose. Is I mean, in an industry which does seem to focus a little bit on youth and novelty, what is it that someone, and no disrespect intended, a 65-year-old who's been involved in previous iterations of the industry, what is it that you bring to a company like Cohesity?
Experience, sage wisdom. And knowledge of this particular segment. I mean, I continue to stay apprised of what's going on in the enterprise storage space. In fact, I only got off the board of NetApp about a year ago. So, you know, it's an area that I think I've got a pretty good handle on. But, besides the stage of the company and the sector that it's in, the third piece of this equation was the relationship I have with Mohit, who I'd never met before, I don't know, maybe May or June. I like to pride myself as being a good mentor. You know, one of my personal accomplishments at NetApp was that we graduated 8 people from the executive team directly into CEO roles. I feel like I had a lot of, you know, impact on them and prepared them to be a CEO. And I'd like to ask them opportunity with Mohit. He's a really bright guy. He's very nice. I mean, I think I'll enjoy working with him. But more importantly, he's pretty self-aware, and knows his own shortcomings. He's never been a CEO before. He's always pretty much always been in a product and technology role. But he's anxious to learn, and he seems very receptive to learning. And so I think we'll have a very beneficial relationship. I think I'll enjoy mentoring him, and I think he'll be a good mentee.
Oh, terrific. And certainly those characteristics of being self-aware and one... From an outsider's perspective, I wouldn't criticize Silicon Valley for being awash in such characteristics. So it is nice and refreshing. it's refreshing to hear that there are people like that around.
He is, and I must say he's extremely intelligent and articulate and charismatic, but he knows what he doesn't know, and I think he's looking for help in those areas. And I think it'll work well. But you're right. I mean, I've met some. I wouldn't join their board, even if I thought I could help, just because of the personality clash and the fact that they didn't need the help. They didn't think they needed help. Here, I think we'll appreciate it.
Oh, it certainly raises my appreciation for the company when I hear those kinds of noises. Tell me a bit more about Cohesity. So I have met them and spoken with them. I know a couple of people who've joined the company over the last 6 months. Tell me about what it is that they're doing, the space that they're in, and what it is that you think that they bring that's unique.
Yeah, so they're in a brand new space. Actually, in a traditional sense, it would be called secondary storage, but this is a very novel approach. Secondary storage market or segment really hasn't had a lot of innovation in the last decade. The major innovation was the data domain architecture, and that's 10 years old. And so Cohesity is coming at that secondary storage segment with a very different approach. I mean, there's some on-prem storage, but there's an awful lot of cloud-based as well. So you can migrate stuff, that's older into a denser infrastructure. And you can also use it for basically mirroring, right? Replication through the WAN across data centers. And that combination, I think, is very powerful. I think it'll be, very attractive alternative to the traditional method. We'll see. I mean, it's it's a new approach, but it's a very exciting one. And I must say, the engineering team, and led by Mohit, are incredibly capable. And I think they've got a really great architecture for solving a lot of current issues with secondary storage.
Yeah, I've heard it mentioned. I noticed on the Cohesity website they've changed the pitch from being copy data management into a secondary storage. I think I'll just bring the website up here, and it says, that's right, hyper-converged secondary storage. So it's fully buzzword compliant. What is it about this secondary storage that you think needs innovation now? I mean, no one's done anything for 10 years. Is it a problem that actually needs solving?
Yeah, I think so. Secondary storage, the whole question of backup and recovery and all the rest of that kind of stuff has always been a burden on most enterprises for the last 80 years. It was tapes, it was this, it was that. I mean, it's always been an expensive, time-consuming, and problematic kind of area. I think the Cohesity architecture kind of is a leap forward from the traditional methods. Even the data domain method, basically all they do is emulate a tape, right? I mean, it looked like a tape device from the viewpoint of the backup systems, and it didn't really help you with any of the other issues of long-term archival or replication across the WAN or any of those other kinds of things. This is a much more comprehensive view of why do you have copies of data anyway, and where do you want them, and how would you like to manage them? And I think they've really thought through the problem set very well. I think that's why they changed the website. Hyperconverged in this sense means it's a replication technology across the WAN. It's an archival technology. It's a backup and recovery technology. All in one consistent, cohesive, if you will, architecture. And I think that's why they changed the website.
Yeah, I admit that I really don't like copy data management as a thing. It's incredibly dry.
Yeah, no, I didn't like it either.
Yeah.
Maybe I had an impact. I asked for him, what the hell is that? That sounds like an engineering term, I mean, NetApp created a market called secondary storage when we introduced the ATA devices way back in the early 2000 era. And I said, everybody knows it's secondary storage. It's whatever's not in production. It's behind production layer. everybody calls it secondary storage. Why don't you just call it that?
Yeah.
And I guess they did.
And that makes a lot more sense. And, I mean, even just me as a sort of external, embedded in the industry, but still somewhat on the side. Secondary, so everything that's not primary storage is a really obvious thing that you say, oh, okay, I get it. Now I know what you're talking about. It's also a reasonably large market, so that will appeal to investors, I'm sure.
I hope so. I think so. Yeah, this is also an area that you don't have to really worry about Amazon Web Services invading, right? I mean, they're not really a good vehicle for solving the needs of the enterprise in the sense of secondary storage. And so there's really no other competition out there. Nobody's really focused on this space right now.
There do seem to be a few startups in this particular area. I've noticed, the names escape me right at the moment, but I have noticed that there are two or three companies that have all seemed to have appeared at VMworld all at the same time. So it does seem to be that a few people have said, hey, we've got this idea, and tried to solve it all roughly the same time, which is the way things tend to work.
Yeah, no,
in this industry.
I understand. Yeah, and I think that's a good observation. You know, after 10 years of, let me say, no innovation and no new firms being created, I think everybody kind of figured out this is a real enterprise problem still, and there's an opportunity here. So, yeah, you generally find it, especially in the storage world for some reason, every 10 years there's another wave that's founded, you know, and, probably less than 10 years ago, maybe 8 years ago, is when all the flash memory guys were founded around the same time.
Mm.
They just seem to kind of go in clusters, either enabled by new technology or a realization that there's a problem that is ready to get solved and new approaches should be applied.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
even...
the case in secondary.
Even extending sort of to backup and recovery, companies like Veeam, who's been around for, I think it's 10 years now, but they've been on a real tear in the last couple of years and are doing very well. But there are other backup, what you would traditionally call backup and recovery type devices, even Rubrik and a few others. So there do seem to be quite a few new entrants in this secondary storage, backup, recovery type, type arrangement. And then some of the incumbents it looks like they've stumbled a little.
Yeah, I think they've lost. Well, you know, I don't want to pick on my old nemesis, EMC, but I don't see them having invested in extending the architecture for the data domain technology. I don't know if they stumbled, they just kind of lost focus on it. You know, once they acquired it, they did well in the marketplace, but they haven't really enhanced it much.
Yeah, and I think I'd agree with that. I think EMC have lots to look forward to in the future. They've done some good things, but yeah, I think hopefully with the acquisition they'll be able to cull the herd a little bit and get some focus back. But we're not here to talk about them. We'll talk about Cohesity.
Nope. And, well, that's right.
That's okay. Let's talk about the storage market more generally. Last Friday we saw some Nimble Data take a big hit based on their numbers. And there do seem to be, it's a big shift, it seems, of all of these newer storage arrays, often flash-enabled, that kind of all singing, all dancing. They come with a whole bunch of features that are baked in from everything from compression to dedupe, which is all driven by the fact that they've got flash in them. But that seems to be taking a bit of market share away from the traditional vendors such as NetApp and EMC. But there's thousands of them. What do you see happening with that market over the next couple of years?
You know, I don't think flash storage ever becomes the predominant storage technology. I think almost every enterprise will incorporate some. The question is, how pervasive does it become? It's still reasonably expensive when you compare it to magnetic disk. So, you know, I think there is definitely a market. I mean, and I think the Nimble approach, which is kind of a hybrid flash disk, it's got a better economic proposition than some that are only flash, right? I think, you know, they'll continue to do well. I know Suresh Vasudevan well. I'm sure he'll continue to grow that company and prosper. Suresh is one of my 8 graduates. Anyway, I think the segments do well. You know, NetApp actually, I think, has done okay with respect to their participation in that market. But the FlashRay, or whatever they called it, that they brought out, I think was immature when they announced it. I think created some confusion. But the both the FAS version of their flash system and the Ingenio version have done very well. And I think FlashRay eventually will be a significant participant as well. Anyway, I think those segments are going to continue to exist. I'm not sure I agree with your proposition that they put pressure on NetApp and others. Clearly, they've taken some share from somewhere, but I think it's actually more from not from EMC and from NetApp. It looks like their market share is held reasonably constant. It's some of the other participants like HP that doesn't have a flash system, or some of the Dell. Dell has lost share, at least until they merge with EMC. So I actually think it's been some of the second-tier players that have felt more pressure than NetApp and EMC, although it certainly eats into the growth opportunity. The thing that's really pressuring everybody, I think, is AWS. From my own viewpoint, enterprise IT in general, whether it be servers or storage or communications, is kind of contracting. It's a shrinking market as people use more services, and not just AWS, but SaaS systems and other things. So I think that's got a bigger impact on the contraction of the market than does the slight share shift to a Nimble or a Pure or somebody. So that's my own sense of what's going on. I don't see any change in that contraction. I think that storage used to be a very high growth market relative to the rest of IT because it's a consumable, right? You fill it up and you got to go get some more. Now you offload so much to other services, AWS, Office 365, ServiceNow, or any of the other SaaS guys, Salesforce, and you no longer host that stuff and don't buy your own storage. But I think that's got the bigger impact.
Yeah, okay. That might be news to a bunch of these companies that are all chasing the enterprise storage market, because I think I was talking to one analyst who was saying that there's something like 80 or 90 different storage startups. In a contracting market, surely not all of them can survive. Do you see them being...
Yeah, I think that's right.
Are they going to get just picked up by some of the other incumbents, or are they just going to crater?
I think both. The dispositions, there won't be a lot of public ones. I think the disposition is largely acquisition by a larger player or eventually go out of business. I'm pretty close to Sequoia Technologies. Sequoia is an investment firm, right, venture capital firm. And they were the lead investor in Nimble. I think one of the partners is still on the board. But I sent them a proposal on a storage company, and they said basically they're done. I mean, they think that segment is going to be very slow growth for as far as the eye can see, and they're not going to make any more investments. And so, I think that's a prudent approach. It's a segment that's kind of saturated, and it's contracting. And the combination of those two makes it not very attractive for startups.
Mm. Yes, I've heard similar things from other investment firms. So it's more of just a matter of time before the consolidation happens.
Yeah, I think so. Either that, some never get traction. It is different on the secondary storage side. I think that there's a few segments in the enterprise infrastructure world that are growing. Clearly, cybersecurity. Like I said, I'm on the board of Palo Alto. That's been exploding. And one of the segments I believe that's ready for additional investment is, in fact, secondary storage and the reengineering of how the non-production side moves through your enterprise, including archival, long-term archive.
Hmm. Yeah, as we've discussed, there's a few people who look like they're going at the problem. Yeah. But you've also mentioned...
I think the production data may go down, but I think the secondary storage side may, in fact, increase, at least over the near term.
Yeah, so you've mentioned cloud in a couple of different contexts, and particularly the big behemoth of AWS. With enterprises looking at AWS for a lot more of their workloads, how do you see that playing out with the secondary storage side of things? Because if your primary copy is up there in the cloud, it makes it difficult for you to actually get it back as a secondary copy without having really, really large networks.
Yeah, there's still a need for all that archival and all the rest of that stuff, and those are not services AWS really provides. Even though they have multiple copies spread around, it's all for availability purposes, not for archival, et cetera. So it's still a problem left to the CIO or his staff. And, I think the Cohesity approach, I think, is attractive for an AWS user. Although, I personally have a view, and I'd be interested in hearing your side of this one. my own opinion is there's not a lot of production work going on at AWS. It's a lot of app dev. But the production stuff, you know, a lot of people are, well, who was the one I just heard pulled back from AWS the other day for their other production stuff? It was a startup. I forget it. But they were in AWS, and as the company grew, they just decided, you know, it's too expensive. If you're in a production mode, you got to kind of do it yourself again.
Yeah, the refrain I keep hearing is that AWS is cheap to fail in and expensive to succeed. So
yeah,
and that, I am seeing pretty much the same thing. It's test dev workloads. The only people who are using it for production tend to be the companies who are, their application, whatever it is built for native AWS things. And there are some workloads that would do it, which would be more web-facing customer service type applications, or, you know, the phone app, things that are custom built and designed to run in an AWS thing from the ground up. But everything else is pretty much virtualized.
Yeah, those apps you just mentioned are not big data consumers. They're network intensive, but they're not storage intensive.
Correct.
And so if you think about it in that context, you know, there's still a lot of enterprise data that's sitting in data centers. It's not on AWS. And I do agree, the big driver is app dev, and it seems to me that, as you put it, it's inexpensive to fail, inexpensive to succeed. Which is true with application development. When it's time for production, bring it back home.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I'm hearing from both customers and other analysts. So with people putting stuff into data centers, I mean, one other trend I'm noticing is that rather than people running their own data centers, they're actually giving it to the data center providers, the likes of Equinix and down here NextDC. Do you see that with customers? Are they hosting gear on their own site, or are you installing more of the stuff into?
No, I agree. But I think, even if it is, quote, their own site, unquote, it's probably done with, what's the name of the custom data center builder? Not Equinix, but basically a firm that does contract data centers where they finance them and you basically pay for them by the month. What the hell's the name?
I've not heard of them.
They're headquartered in San Francisco, and they've done quite... In fact, the NetApp guys did a deal to put a data center in Oregon, and they did it with this firm. But anyway, it's either like an Equinix or somebody like that where you rent rack space, you know, or rack space itself, right? Or it's, something that's DRT, Digital Realty Trust, I believe is the name.
Oh, okay, part of Digital Realty, right. Okay.
And DRT, I think, is the name of the company, Digital Realty Trust. But they basically do all the work to secure the land, build the building, all the rest of that stuff. And but it's got a long-term contract. It's the same way a lot of office buildings are done, right? Mm. They're not exactly done on spec. They're done more for a custom tenant and long-term commitments and all the rest. But, yeah, it's going to be that kind of model. I don't think there's going to be many corporate data centers built and owned by corporations anymore. I think those days are over. That's true even in the government, you know, even in the security sector where they say, we got to own our own, we have, perimeter security and all the rest of this stuff. Those are now largely provided by third parties, including Equinix.
Hmm. Yeah, so speaking of a slightly broader view of the tech market, I know that you're on the board, or we're on the board of Aruba, and you are currently, I believe, on Palo Alto Networks. So the security field does seem to be exploding with interest over the last couple of years in particular. What do you see happening in that sector?
You know, I see it continuing to be a lot more investment proportionally of the IT budgets. There's a lot of new approaches coming to market, and I think people are going to continue to figure out which ones are most effective. Palo Alto has done extremely well. In fact, they just announced their earnings. I think the earnings went on the wire at 1 o'clock today.
Okay, I haven't checked those.
Yeah, about the time we started this phone call is when they released. But they're on an unbelievable growth rate, and it's when you think about it, no CIO in the world wants a public execution, right? And that's the risk.
It's a lot easier to get someone to give you money when they're highly motivated like that.
Yeah, everybody's scared to death, you know. And somebody once told me there's two things that really sell: sex and fear. And,
that's true.
IT is not sexy, so you do it on fear.
Right. I'll be sure to tell my sales guys that. if it is being sold on fear, I mean, there is a lot of fear out there. One of the risks with a fear-based sale or making decisions under that sort of circumstance is that you just grasp at straws and pick up whatever someone wheels in and say, hey, you buy this magic box and it'll solve all of your problems. Is that really going to help us much, or is it more that we need to rethink the way that we've been handling security, kind of root and branch?
I think the newer technologies, I don't think it's just, you know, grab a new box and your problems are solved. I think both the addition of a CISO in most enterprises, which didn't exist 10 years ago, and it coupled with a number of new approaches or radical modifications to old approaches, I personally think it's a containable or manageable problem, even though the threats continue to escalate and you have to keep, you know, constant diligence around it. You never can say I'm impenetrable, and so, you know, it's a constant battle. But I don't think it's that fragmented. I'm also on the board of Bechtel, and we've got a pretty secure system. And you know, it's really only five pieces or something like that. Palo Alto is a piece of it. You know, Splunk is a piece of it. You go through the list, and it's just not that much. But how you architect it inside the enterprise has got to be pretty carefully managed.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
You go back just a few years, I'll bet 90% of corporate America did not have a CISO.
Yeah.
And now they all do, you know. And if they don't have one, they're scrambling to find one.
Yeah.
That alone highlights the importance that people place on cybersecurity. And those CISOs are not just policymakers, but technologists. And they know what they're doing. I mean, the fraternity does compare notes. And they're guided by organizations like the NSA and the FBI, and you know, some of the major carriers like AT&T and Verizon have, you know, clearinghouse services, and it's not that fragmented.
Mm. No, I don't, well, there is certainly a skills shortage, as we keep
hearing. Yeah, there's a skills shortage. I agree.
That sector, yep.
Yeah, it's moving so fast, you know, that there's not enough people growing up with this stuff.
True. Well, Dan, we are nearly out of time, so is there anything that we didn't cover that you would, you'd like to talk about?
I thought it was great. I enjoyed the discussion.
Well, terrific, and it's certainly been a pleasure and an honour to have a conversation with you, again, after this all these many years, and I look forward to seeing what Cohesity and your other investments are doing.
Now, I'll look forward to seeing you personally again. All right, Justin, take care.
And thanks again to Dan Warmenhoven for having a chat to me. Well, that's it for this episode of the EigenCast. I hope you've enjoyed it and managed to learn a thing or two. I certainly did. If you'd like to listen to more episodes of the EigenCast, go along to the EigenCast website, eigenmagic.com. You'll be able to see a link to the EigenCast and lots of past episodes. You can also find the EigenCast in iTunes, so if you'd like to subscribe with your favourite Apple product, go ahead and do that. But there's also subscribe links on the website for various other devices, including Android. This episode of the EigenCast was sponsored by Pivot9 Consulting. You can find them at pivot9.com. And if you'd like to sponsor an episode of the EigenCast, get in touch with us by email to eigencast@eigenmagic.com. If you'd like to chat with me about any of the topics we've discussed in this or any other episode, best place to find me is on Twitter @JPWarren. So until next time, bye for now. We'll be right back.